Inequality has profound consequences in how we think, how our cardiovascular systems respond to stress, how our immune systems function, and how we view moral ideas like justice and fairness. Inequality is not the same as poverty, although it can feel an awful lot like it. Inequality makes people feel poor and act poor even when they're not. Leading psychologist Keith Payne has written a new book that explores all of this, The Broken Ladder, How Inequality Affects the Way We Think, Live, and Die, examining how inequality affects us at the individual level with dramatic impacts on our brains, our bodies, and our values. Again, the name of the book is The Broken Ladder, and we welcome Keith Payne to the roundtable this morning. Keith, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
What brought you to this particular project and look at inequality in this way?
Well, my research has been focusing on inequality in various ways for many years. I've been studying topics like implicit bias and how it affects people's decisions, and more recently, how income inequality affects the kinds of decisions and behaviors that people engage in. So, you know, the public conversation around income inequality has been growing over the last several years, and I think it's reaching a point of public awareness where it's not just sort of policy wonks worrying about these issues. I think people are talking about income inequality in their everyday lives, and so we're at a point now in the social science research where we have a lot to say about it. And so although a lot has been written about the economics of inequality, not much has been written for a broad audience about what inequality does to us psychologically, behaviorally, physically in our daily lives.
Yes, we should note you are a professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of North Carolina. So with that background, how do you look at this fact that half of Americans under 30 believe that the American dream is dead to them?
It's interesting, these subjective perceptions that people have, because if you look at the objective data, the poorest two-fifths of the country are exactly where they were in income-adjusted dollars in the late 60s. What's changed over those decades has not been the poor getting poorer, even though that's how the saying goes. What's been changing is that the rich are getting much, much richer. And so when people, even middle-class people, look around them, what they see is other people getting much, much further ahead, and it feels to them, by comparison, that they're falling behind. And so I think that's a lot of what's going on with people's pessimistic perceptions of the economy, pessimistic perceptions of the future. They're not just paying attention to literal dollars and cents. What they're doing is comparing themselves to other people. And in an economy that's as unequal as ours, that makes almost everybody feel poorer by comparison.
You talk about how the human body responds to poverty and unfavorable social conditions. Talk a little bit about that. Ultimately, what happens and how we respond to it basically as a physical threat.
That's right. The human body has an amazing set of defense mechanisms, and a lot of times this whole suite of defense mechanisms is called the stress response, and it's related to the immune response as well. And when we have a physical threat, let's say there's a predator about to attack or some kind of physical threat in the environment, we have a pretty stereotyped set of immediate bodily responses to deal with that. We dump lots of glucose into the blood to give us lots of energy for fighting or flight. We start the immune response proactively, even if we haven't been injured, just in case we might be injured. And that's a really adaptive set of responses if you are faced with an actual physical threat. The problem is that humans are really good at activating those stress responses, not just in the face of immediate physical threats, but also social threats, psychological threats, and even threats that aren't in the immediate environment, just threats that we're thinking about or worrying about in the future. And so the fact that we respond to those sort of abstract, psychological, future-oriented threats by turning on the stress response causes a lot of problems, because the stress response is incredibly adaptive in the short run. But just like taking powerful prescription medications, a lot of times the body's own medications provide or cause side effects. And if we're turning on the stress response for long periods of time, that creates a lot of side effects that cause problems in the long term. And so the kinds of social comparisons and feeling badly off compared to others, that's experienced a lot like physical poverty, physical deprivation, and as a result, being in a place with high levels of inequality makes most people feel threatened, and they experience it as if it's a bodily, physical threat.
It should be noted that you have lived through much of this. You grew up in a very poor rural upbringing, and then you ended up studying and teaching at these elite universities. So you are writing about much of what you have lived through.
That's right. It is interesting to see what the scientific data says about how both being on the low end of inequality and being on the high end of inequality affects our daily lives. And when I sat down to start writing the book, it was actually surprisingly easy to come up with examples, just thinking back to my life, where I could see myself being on, early in my life, often on the losing end of that distinction. And I thought it was interesting to think about how things have changed over the years, that I've actually benefited from a lot of the upside of inequality without necessarily realizing it at the time.
So do you think, you being a psychologist, do you think you look into this and your interest in this comes from your personal experience of looking not only at others, but from your vantage point?
Yeah, I think it's probably not that unusual that researchers end up studying topics that are of personal relevance to them. I don't think I went into it consciously making that decision, but it was actually many years later when I started thinking about writing a book that my wife actually pointed out that was probably what I was doing, and she said, "You should just write about what you know," and so that helped to make it more concrete for me.
So when we talk about how inequality harms people, what can we do, and what do you believe that we can do individually, and what do you believe we can do as a society and a culture and as a country to lessen that harm done by inequality for us, for our kids, and for future generations?
Right. Well, there are a number of things we can do, starting at the most sort of immediate individual level. One thing that we can do is be smarter about the social comparisons that we make. You know, a lot of advice gurus tell people to stop comparing yourself to other people, but I think that's kind of unrealistic advice, because humans are constantly comparing ourselves to other people. It happens so automatically that we don't even know that we're doing it in many cases. But instead, I think a better strategy is to be wise about our social comparisons, to compare selectively. So what we tend to do as a default is look around us and pay attention to the wealthiest, the most famous, the most successful people around us. And by comparison to them, everybody feels poor, feels bad. But that's not the only people we can compare to. We can compare to other people who are more similar to us. We can also compare to people who are worse off than us. That doesn't sound very polite, but it has positive effects psychologically by boosting one's own feelings of effectiveness. And probably even more powerful is that we can compare to ourselves in the past or what we envision ourselves to be in the future. So if you've overcome challenges in your past, you can take advantage of feeling sort of superior to yourself and reap some of the benefits from that. So that's one of the things that we can do at the individual level. At the level of institutions, in cases like school settings, one thing that we can do to break the connection between feelings of low status and low performance that have been documented in the literature is that simple reminders for students that they belong can be very powerful. So when people look around them and see that if you're a first generation or a poor kid in a school, for example, you may see others around you that seem like they've got it all figured out. Their parents have all the right things, and they've got the right clothes, and it makes kids who don't have those things feel left out, feel like they don't belong. Some simple intervention studies have been done in schools, and they find that simple reminders like asking kids to write short essays about values that are important to them and that they excel at, providing feedback like telling students when you hand back their assignments that even though we have high standards, I know you can do this. If the teacher conveys messages like that, it makes especially poor kids, minority kids, and first-generation college kids feel like the presence of inequality doesn't necessarily signal to them that they don't belong there. So that's something that we can do at the institutional level. And then at the larger societal level, I think although lots of people have written about economic policies, I'm a psychologist, I'm not here to recommend particular economic policies or particular political outcomes, but I think it's clear that the degree of inequality that exists in a society is a function of the choices people make. And so if we are concerned about reducing inequality, and I think anybody who's concerned about outcomes like life expectancy, infant mortality, chronic disease, crime rates, all of these things that are predicted by high levels of inequality, we should be voting for policies that actively aim not only for increasing growth for the wealthiest people, but also reducing inequality.
My final question to you is, with what you just said on the record, how optimistic are you?
Well, I think this is not a short-term target, right? So at a societal level, these things take time. I'm encouraged by the fact that income inequality itself has become a primary part of our public conversation. I think the polarization that exists in America is going to make it very difficult to tackle in the short term. But in the short term, we can implement some of those more immediate person-level strategies in everyday life.
Well, the name of the book is The Broken Ladder, How Inequality Affects the Way We Think, Live, and Die. It is published by Viking. Keith Payne, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is The Broken Ladder. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.